Hello, hello, and hello, everybody. Welcome back for another episode. If not now, when? In today's show, I am so beyond excited to invite one of my friends, Ruben Arias, to join us. As a founder of Be Reader, Ruben is a seasoned actor entrepreneur with over 12 years of experience. Ruben grew up in San Diego, Chile, in a low-income family household, and is the first in his family to attend college. And because of that, Ruben is super passionate about transforming education and empowering students of the world to have a chance to unlock their potential through education. Today, the Be Reader have positively impacted over 500,000 of K-12 Spanish-speaking students across Latin and United States, generating substantial revenue and raised over $9 million in venture capital in United States. With that, my friend, I am so beyond excited. Please join me to welcome Ruben to the show. Well, Ruben, thank you so much for coming join us. I'm so beyond excited.
Me too. Thank you for having me. It's always nice being surrounded by friends.
Oh, what an honor. So tell us, Ruben, how does all the magic begin for you?
Wow. So that's how you're starting the... Okay. I don't know. I don't know if I would call it magic to begin with. I think it's all about hard work, committing to yourself, having purpose in life, identifying what makes you happy, what doesn't make you happy.
So how do you do that? Grew up in San Diego, Chile.
I've been very lucky about it, I think. Mm-hmm. I have very nice role models in my life. My mother is my superhero. So she showed me how to do things. I think probably she's the magic. Now you ask me again. Yeah.
And with that, do you always know that you want to pursue higher education?
Yes. She taught me to read when I was 3. Mm. So clearly she had some intentions with me. She wanted to maximize my potential, I think. She always made sure that I had the chances to succeed in life, mm-hmm. basically.
And just so give us some context, right? You grew up in a low-income family. No one in the family went above for any education.
I was the first person in my family going to higher education. So I'm, to some extent, probably fulfilling dreams from my grandparents, my parents as well.
And is it always what you wanted to do when you were little?
I was always the best student. because my mom always told me, hey, this is the only job you have in your life. I will take care of everything else. You just make sure to be a good student. And I'm very competitive, so I didn't take the good as my best chance. I wanted to do better than that. So,
what does that mean to be great? Not just good, but great. What does that mean for you?
I wanted to excel in everything. I wanted to truly be the best student. I wanted to learn as much as I could. I wanted to be the best prepared student in class always, no matter the subject.
Why?
I wanted to be, because I loved learning from ever, and I love learning today as well. So it was, to some extent, intuitive. I always saw, even though my family didn't have higher education, I always saw them studying and reading, whatever, that doesn't matter, which is not that common probably in Latin America, at least in my social economical class. It was not that common. And that's something that I kind of took it for granted. It was, this is how life should be. That was normal to me. People reading all the time, learning about and discussing about different topics, not just, news, but other topics as well. I think that I come from a family that probably didn't go to college, but were always learners. And that's part of my inspiration as well.
Mm.
So it was easy. It was natural to me.
I love that. I think we are connecting on the growth mindset that we first met. Mm-hmm. And I just have such an admiration to you and the path you walked on and how you truly become an inspiration in the family and generation to come. So with that, tell us what's next for you after you pursue your college, and what's next for you?
You mean nowadays or what happened next?
Yeah, by
what
the time,
next?
Yeah. And
okay.
What do you know how do you know what you want to be?
Yeah. So one day I was like 10, 11, and I met this guy. He was an engineer. He was describing in front of other people what his normal day looked like at work. And it, to me, was so fascinating. He was describing management. He was describing optimization and processes. I was just 10, 11. I didn't understand, of course, everything that he was saying. But the way he was speaking was so compelling and inspiring that I said, oh, I want to be like him one day. And it happened very easily to me. I learned a little bit more about his career. I read some articles about it. And I talked to one of my teachers at school. And yeah, it was like a no-brainer. Decision made immediately. I want to be an engineer.
Engineer? Okay.
Yeah, I want to be an engineer. And I knew it from day one. And it was the right choice, of course. I loved every single second of my student life in college. Always thinking of, again, not just getting a certain type of knowledge, but also the experience. Mm-hmm. That was something that captivated my mind. I had, great professors, people that were always incentivizing us to not just to learn more for the sake of the next test you have to pass, but trying to identify your purpose as well. So to give you an example, I was so frustrated with some things in my faculty, things that were not working, minor things. And I thought, if I attended another college, this problem couldn't be here. I'm pretty sure they are far along in this process. These guys here are a new university, because it was a university. And I was complaining with another student. And this professor, physics professor, heard me out. And he called me to his office. And he said, hey, if you want to go there, this other university, go there. But be aware, you'll be one out of 100 other students just like you, talented, committed, just as you are. So there, you're not going to make any difference. But if you stay here, and if you decide to stay, you're going to help this university to become the greatest university ever, because the mindset you have is what we need. So he screwed me up. He forced me to stay without playing any games. He was just pulling the right string with me. He pushed the button, the motivation button, in a way that never happened to me before. I stayed, clearly. And I helped to make the university a little better, I think.
Wow.
Yeah. So where is the magic there? I don't know. But it just happened to me. So probably, as you call it, university is doing magic things sometimes. You just need to hear it.
It's like activate your superpower. It's like speaking to your heart about what do you want and what matters to you, and allow you to really step into a bigger version of yourself.
Clearly.
So tell us what happened after that. How does it connect to Be Reader today?
Yeah. So my friends started to graduate. We are approaching the end of the career. By the way, engineering in Chile is 5-6 years, not like here. So it's clearly way tougher.
I would take 5 years to graduate too.
Okay. So. But there is the normal duration of the career.
Oh, okay.
It lasts. Mm. Whatever. So I was in year 5 or something like that, and my older friends were graduating, and they went to work for big companies, very successful international companies. And my friend were very excited. Hey, I'm going to be an account executive for this bank, international bank. Oh, I'm going to work for Coca-Cola company. Oh, very nice. A month after they started working, their faces were not the same. They were not as excited as they used to be. Why? Well, there are other 100 employees just like me. My boss barely knows my name. I feel like a number in a huge spreadsheet, and that's what I am. It's like I could miss the entire week at work and nobody would notice.
Wow.
So that created a big impact in my perception, because I had the same mindset. Hey, I want to go and work for the largest airline, company in Chile, which was my admiration. Mm. I wanted to work for them. And after hearing that, I said, probably this is another sign from the universe. I don't want to be like that. I want to do something different. And then something mysterious happened. This was 2009, 2008, Latin America. So nobody was talking about Y Combinator or Silicon Valley or innovation whatsoever or venture capital whatsoever. So, but I had the chance to attend this conference where the top business school in Chile put together a group of experts talking about innovation and this new concept, startups. And I was so fascinated with the concept. I fell in love. And I said, dang, this sounds like me. Okay, but I don't have any business idea. I don't come from a family with a business background at all. But I'm a learner. I can learn. So little by little, I started connecting some dots. I learned that education was a big thing. One of my dreams in the back of my mind was, hey, when I become rich and famous, I will start a school for poor kids. That was one of my dreams. So when one day this big researcher in Chile started talking about reading comprehension and lack of literacy skills among Chilean students, it opened my eyes to this problem that I've been literally obsessed with ever since, which is the lack of reading comprehension. I learned that it was not only among Chilean students, it was everywhere in the Spanish-speaking world. International assessments show it year after year. The percentage of kids today that at fourth grade are able to read and comprehend a text in Spanish is less than 25%.
Wow.
Fourth graders.
Oh my goodness.
So I fell in love with the problem and I got obsessed with the problem, literally.
That's, by the way, what define a great entrepreneurs.
Obsession?
Obsession with the problem, uh-huh. Not the product itself.
Yeah.
First and foremost, you love the problem, you love people you are serving, and then create the right product for that. I think that's number one definition on great entrepreneurs to sometimes entrepreneur wanted to be.
Yeah. I agree with you.
Tell us
I agree with you.
More after that.
So this gentleman, more and more on national TV, on national news, talking about the same problem, like evangelizing. Mm. Hey, guys, we have two Nobel Prizes in Chile. Poetry is our thing. We love to think that we're great readers, but this is the sad reality. Our kids don't understand what they read. And he proved with evidence that, for instance, students going to law school first year versus last year in their career, reading comprehension didn't improve at all.
There's no way.
And they are just reading all day long, right? And it doesn't improve. So he was like, imagine what happens with people that don't read every day as lawyers do. And that made an impact on me. And I said, hey, this has to stop because it doesn't make sense to me. How is that possible? I made my homework. I talked to a bunch of experts. I talked to people that spent their lives learning about how people learn to read and how comprehension can be improved. And I came up with an initial concept. That initial concept is kind of the grandfather of what Be Readers is today.
Yeah.
And it started the first company there. But that's a story for another day, probably.
Incredible. And tell us a little bit more about back then you were the first college graduate in your family. I imagine your family had a high hope for you. So instead of going to the big bank or big airline company, you decided to start on business. Was that controversy-ish in the family? Does everyone support you? Or your mom said, hey, Lupin, what is startup? You should work for this airline.
You know what? She was my, up until today, my first hiring. Yep.
You sell the vision. You incur her. Yeah. You bring her to your world.
She was my... Yeah.
And she believed in you.
I've always had her support, no matter what. Of course.
Beautiful.
You may say, hey, it's your mom. They have to do it. Not really. Not really. This part of the world, especially, it's not that you see it so frequently. Yeah, people may say, yeah, I have your back. I got your back, no matter what. Okay, but when the time comes, where are you?
Time will tell, for sure.
Time will tell. But yeah, she's been there. My family didn't understand very much what this nonsense meant. Not at all.
Not getting paid, working, 14, 16 hours a day. Wait, what are you doing? Working, but not getting paid? Doesn't make sense.
Are you freelancing? Are you volunteering? What's your deal? Yeah, kind of.
So was it hard for you to still hold that vision and move forward, even though everyone else did not really seem to understand you at the time?
I mean, certainly my family didn't make any arguments about it, but friends didn't get it. They were like, hey, are you volunteering? Hey, let's go this place. It's going to be a lot of fun, but hey, it's a bit expensive. Hey guys, please go yourself. I cannot do it. I can't afford it. Why? You're an engineer, just as I am. Yeah, but I have a startup. Ah, come on. Stop playing that game. It's not enough. I mean, it's not fair for you. You deserve better. Hey, why don't you go and find a real job? Mm-hmm. And the type of phrases
And that doesn't bother you, Ruben?
Back then, I think I've never have had a lot of friends. My true friends, probably they stopped asking. And they were by my side, no matter what, and probably just hanging out for the weekend or whatever. But nah, not anymore.
You're so cool, Ruben. So tell us, now you start a business, multiple business, but tell me, how's that whole process went for you? You have ideas that, well, I'm going to start a business by then, but then to actually start a process of, right, again, 14, 16 hours a day and not getting paid up front, right? All the things, not just small things. Was that go with exactly how you expect? Was entrepreneurship everything you wanted it?
Well, this is another thing. When I was, about to graduate in, at least in that part of the world, you have to write kind of an essay explaining, hey, what are your lessons learned or something like that, a thesis. So my thesis was about entrepreneurship. So I interviewed 12, 15 entrepreneurs from the Endeavor Network in Chile. And I was asking them, it was like an interview. Mm-hmm. They gave me like 60, 90 minutes, each one of them. And I had my 10, 12 questions to ask them. And then I compiled their answers. And I still have that handbook. That was my thesis. I created a handbook. Best practices, if you want.
What is the best practices?
Things that I am experiencing right now. Like, never forget to train yourself your first sales reps. Never stop training yourself your first sales reps. Because you know your product, your service better than nobody else.
You're always selling and you're the best salesperson for your company.
You have to be. That's something we know, right? You should be your best salesperson in your company. Right. But when the company keeps growing and growing, then naturally you kind of lose sight of certain things. That's one you shouldn't lose sight ever. Mm. So that's a lesson that I keep repeating myself, especially this year. I've been doing a lot of training with my sales team. So I can say that it's like when you read a book or you see a movie and you are too young to understand or to relate with certain things. Mm-hmm. So that handbook to me was like that. Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, these lessons are so fascinating. I love them. Yeah, but what the hell should I do with them? I have no company to put this in practice. Now, with perspective, I can see that was very valuable. Mm. And hopefully it's going to be shared by more and more people that can actually take a benefit from what I wrote 12, 13, more, 15 years ago almost.
You should publish it.
I should, right? I think so.
Well, this never should. Just do whatever calls your heart forward. But back to you. Is entrepreneurship everything you expect? given you have a handbook and you start idea, the business, was it aligned with your expectation? When they surprise you?
You know, when it comes to when it comes to see your students and teachers' faces using your product, your solution, yes, everything I dreamed of, everything and more. A few weeks ago, I received a letter. I mean, actually, like 25 letters from students from one elementary school here in Round Rock ISD. That is our customer.
Oh.
And they were asking something beautiful. Their teacher received from us a pen with the shape of a B, which is kind of our signature in B readers. And she showed the pen to the students. So they were, hey, miss, we want that pen as well. Why don't you? Okay, guys, you want it? You're going to write B Reader CEO a letter asking for a pen. And I need you to tell them how much you love B Readers. And I have the letters. And I went to the mailbox, of course, and I got the letters and I started reading. I couldn't stop crying. So is it everything I expected? Yes, and more. From that standpoint. Then
so beautiful.
Other aspects I don't like, I don't get. Probably part of the human interaction that I don't like that much when it comes to transactions. When it comes to money, things get a little
dicey. What do you mean by that?
Investors that don't really care, and they say they care, but they don't. And they show you a part of them that is so nice, so polite. I do care about these kids, about their education. But honestly speaking, they don't care. It's just about the money.
We care, right? You know
that. Yeah, of course. That's why I'm here. That's what I'm here. Other people that, I don't know, sometimes team members that take advantage of things and you don't like that because it's not part of your core values. So how this person passed the test at the beginning. Well, clearly we were not paying enough attention to some selection processes, clearly. Or we failed training this person or showing this person what we expect from them. Things like that.
People, a little bit challenging.
It's people. It's adults, not kids. And teachers. We love teachers because they are the best. They do everything they can and more for their students. So we love them, of course. But sometimes these other people, business people, it's like.
What do you think is the hardest lesson you have in the last, 12, 15 years running B Readers?
Being, I'm sure you've heard this concept, but learning whether you are default dead or default alive.
That's elaborate, please.
Okay, so how do you know if you are default dead? Company seems to be okay, but if you dig deeper into financials, the company's dead because it's just burning a lot of cash. It's not healthy. It loses customers faster than it gets new customers. Mm-hmm. So basically, it's a matter of time. You're going to be dead. On the other hand, default alive means no matter what happens, your business is sustainable. You don't depend on the next raise of capital. That's one of my favorite lessons. And I'm working to become default alive, of course.
I love that concept. It's essentially self-sustain that customers bring the full momentum rather than depends on next raise.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially in this environment. It's so hard to raise these days.
What is hardest thing? What is so hard to raise?
Speculation. Money is there. Investors don't want to pull the trigger or they feel like it's not the right time, but what is the right time? Also, there is a macro transformation about how valuations work these days. It's how you perceive a company from not just a valuation standpoint, but the cash it burns. Is it overspending? Is it expanding to grow no matter what? Does this company actually have an exit strategy?
Do you have an exit strategy?
I think so.
To just make world a better place, never edit, or actually have edit strategy. Because I can totally see that in you, Ruben.
Well, if it's not this company, I'm going to be doing something else for sure.
Always entrepreneur?
I think so.
Once entrepreneur, always
entrepreneur.
When you have that itch, when you have that, you taste that flavor, you cannot really let it go, right?
It's part of it. I'm
the zest.
I just love starting things from scratch.
What do you like about
it? Uncertainty.
You like uncertainty?
Yeah.
I know,
most of people. I know.
But you liked it.
I like the way life can surprise you in some ways.
What has life surprised you this year? Or last 5 years? By the way, since we met 5 years ago, let's talk about for the first second.
Surprises. Well, you're a surprise. You were a surprise to me.
How?
Well, So, there's a why. I tried to grow my company in Latin America for 9 years, straight 9 years. Mm-hmm. In the first 6 months here, in the first 6 months in 2020, my first 6 months in the U.S., I did and accomplished more than I accomplished in the past 9 years combined.
Mm.
Period.
Mm.
That's my statement. Why? Meeting people that truly want to help you. Yourself. People that truly give a dang about what you're doing, not just for the sake of philanthropy. They put their wallet where their mouth is. Investors. Experts in the industry that first are excellent at their job, but also they want to give back.
Mm-hmm.
They want to help and starters like me, saying, hey, you're a newcomer, you don't know how this industry works here in the U.S., let me show you a couple of things. So that doesn't happen that frequently in Latin America. In Chile, it probably never happened, or just a few exceptions.
Mm.
So coming here was a total surprise. I mean, it was not that I didn't expect that my business was going to grow faster. But I didn't expect the amount of attention, the amount of people really wanted to support me.
Yeah. Ruben, really, you know, the moment I met you, I just know you are someone that just so focused. You have the fire in your eyes. I just so inspired. I light up the room when you enter. And I know this is not just a business, a company for you. This is a life work, a mission for you. And for that reason, I know that no matter what, you're going to be succeed regarding really empowering and supporting those students of the world, having the opportunity to really, you know, seeking, you know, their own potential and the next level of their life. So for that reason, I'm speaking for myself, but I also know that passion was so inviting, therefore everyone around you and can see that sense that I want to support you. And I think that's one of your superpowers.
Thank you. Well, we've talked about this before, so you know what I think. For the people listening to this, it's admiration, it's gratitude, it's all about having a network of friends, and advisors and mentors, a springboard that can help you to, you know, jump higher and fly better, finally.
Do you remember that 4 hours whiteboarding session
we
had?
Day. Every single day.
That Every was day. So cool.
It's something that I've done with my team after you showed me the methodology. It's like getting to the deepest part of your brain and your soul and your heart.
That's so
exciting. Why we do this, guys? Why are we doing this? Why are we on this?
Without the why, what never matters?
Nothing happened. Yep. That's probably the magic that
I
you were
it.
Asking. Yeah.
I love it. And you're speaking about coming here, right? So for the context of others. So 5 years ago, Ruben bring the business from Chile now to Austin. Now really it's an international company. Now speaking for entrepreneurs who are listening, who are maybe also thinking bring their business in U.S. in the global stage, I'm curious, do you have any like thoughts or best practices you can share?
Yeah, I would say come visit first.
Mm.
Take a look around, see how it looks like, what type of food these people eat here, how do they dress, how do they talk, what type of things they do on the weekend, how are you going to network in this new city, in this new country?
How do you summarize it to other people about how people network, how people meet each other and talk to each other in this new world?
So it's 24/7, everything. It's a combination of everything at once, 24/7. It's like, get ready for a meeting on Sunday morning, breakfast. That's going to be your normal day, probably, when you're starting here. And it's okay. You need to embrace it. Be prepared to change your location on LinkedIn, for instance, and immediately your connections will explode. Immediately. Of course, most of the connections will be spam, trying to sell you something. But at the same time, there will be valuable people coming to your network. That's something that doesn't happen in any other part of the world, for sure. It's just the magnetism surrounding some special locations like our beloved Austin.
Of course. It's such a vital and just full of energy and zest.
Yeah.
And I'm curious, you know, being a entrepreneur, but speaking English is second language, speaking for both of us here, and a lot of entrepreneurs maybe also listening on the other end, sometimes they kind of a little bit like worry or maybe feel a little bit less confident, right? How do you advise them when it comes to, you know, bringing the business in the United States and feeling that, yeah, they may be a small team today, but they have a huge opportunity to grow into a bigger team in the future. But how can we have that confidence and the know-how to bring value to whoever we are meeting in those conversations?
Well, this is a confession. I'm 38. I learned English when I was 30. I've never, ever spoke English before that. Not that I didn't have English at school, but I'd never truly spoke English before. So when I came here, of course, I was super nervous. I was like, is these people going to really understand what I'm saying? Is my accent a problem? Is it going to be like a deal breaker when I'm negotiating something?
Yeah.
So what I did was getting ready for it. I was paying attention to how people speak. I was paying attention to, and I do it today. I have to. I kind of make sure that in my mind the phrase sounds okay, and then, okay, mouth, do your thing. Probably a little slower. Okay. So I had to get ready. I had to prep. Big meetings today, for big meetings, I have my notes in front of me. Mm-hmm. So I know what I have to say and when I have to say it. Mm. I have a couple of bad jokes, of course, that here and there you can intertwine or something like that. But yeah, if you actually care about your audience, you'll do no matter what to pass the message and make sure that people is getting the message and they are giving you in return what you expect to get in return. It's like paying attention to your slides or your marketing messaging. It's the same. The delivery is so important. So yeah, get ready to study, I think.
One thing I love so much about you, Ruben, is you're always prepared.
Yeah, you have to.
I think that is just recipe for success.
It's you know what they say? It's preparation meeting opportunity.
100%. Talking about a true educational educator and entrepreneur. And in my mind, you know, Ruben, really, I never have a second thought. Your English word, the way how you articulate, the way how I see it is a lot of entrepreneurs, a lot of international entrepreneurs feeling a little bit insecure. Oh my God, what my accent, what my look. But I believe that the speaking is like a clothes I wear. Today I wear pink, tomorrow I wear blue. It does not change who I am as a person. In other words, language is just a pure media for which to express our idea, our vision. At the end of the day, no one cares about our accent. People care about how we can create a bigger value for our customer, our community, and everyone around. And that's how I see the language. Yes.
Yeah. Two thoughts came to my mind hearing you. This is like for normal people out there.
Okay.
Are you concerned about accents? So get
Some
ready.
People, yes.
Get ready to go to back to college, post grad. And hear accents from professors there. There is no single American accent, probably, at Columbia Business School, where I am studying right now. No American accent whatsoever. And I've had classes with over 20 professors already. So what's the point of that? And the second thought is a quote from Sofia Vergara, a very famous actress from Colombia, Modern Family. Probably people know her from Modern Family. She says, dang, I'm so much smarter in Spanish than I am in English. I always think that.
And remember, I saw the emoji.
That's me all the time.
Brilliant.
Dang, dang, dang. I want to say something in Spanish and people will get me, but yeah.
So just know that the fact that you are speaking a second language, you're already a winner. Think about all those amazing men and women you met. How many of them speak in two languages?
Mm-hmm.
Almost none. So I wish that could give us a little bit more confident
it
and
should,
ease yeah. and feeling that, you know what? Walking in a room, we already a champion. The fact that we are here, the fact that we're showing up, we say goodbye to all of our comforts, our home, our family, and come to this new foreign world and seeking for new opportunity.
That's a courage. Absolutely. You're exactly on point there. And it's not just to become like, hey, look at me. I speak two languages. But something like a true fact from mm-hmm. the U.S. This country today is the second largest Spanish-speaking country in the world, just behind Mexico. Some projections show that by 2050, the U.S. will surpass Mexico and will become the largest Spanish-speaking country in the world. It's going to be around one third of the population. So don't joke about it.
Mm-hmm.
Do you really want to harness communication in this part of the world, period, learn Spanish.
Mm.
Learn Spanish. Spanish is the third largest language in the world, just behind Mandarin and English. So go for it.
Wow. If I learn that, you know, I'll be like,
do it.
Unstoppable.
Right now. Yeah. You can talk to 99% of world population, basically.
I love it.
Yeah. That's a superpower.
I love it. Yes and yes. So now talk about coming to the United States. Let's talk about business for a sec. Besides the language, the accent, mm-hmm. be prepared, right? What do you think is the biggest adjustment you have to do as a business owner coming to the United States? With all the 1,000 items on your plate, right? What is the number one biggest adjustment you are making, you have made?
So one is a cultural adjustment, and the other one is a speed adjustment. I'm going to explain both. So culturally, in Latin America, culture is like more humble. Hey, Gwen, how are you doing today?
Huh? Okay.
Okay. Can't complain. Something like that. There is like, we want to over-explain all the time. Why? Because we really care about it. And we are going to show you how I really feel. Here, people don't care. So it's like, hey, how you doing? Go to the point. Adjustment. Also, in Spanish, we say, hey, I'm trying to do this. I've been doing this other thing, but I'm trying to do this other. So it's like, hey, man, are you doing it or not? You're not trying to do things here in the U.S. You do things. There's no should, you tell me before, right? Here you do it or you're not.
Yep.
You're not a trier. You are a doer, mm-hmm. period. So that's it's a linguistic and mm-hmm. cultural adjustment. Then speed.
Speed, right?
Speed. Mm-hmm. We live slower, a slower life in Latin America.
Mm.
Things are not on schedule. Never. Let's meet at 10. 10:05, you are on time. 10:10, not a problem. 10:30, okay, give me a call. That's how it works there. Here it's not. Not that I like the way we do it there. I'd rather this system much better.
Mm.
But it's how it is.
Mm-hmm.
Then structure. Okay, we have a 30 minutes meeting.
Mm-hmm.
People in front of you would expect you to give them an agenda and you outline how the meeting is going to go. So first, 30 seconds intro. So 10 seconds to say who you are, what you want, 20 seconds the other person, and then outline of the agenda. This is what I expect from you today.
Mm-hmm.
What do you expect from me in return? Mm-hmm. And then let's exchange in the conversation. Down there, flexibility everywhere. Hey, do you want to talk weather? Let's do it. Ah, soccer last night. Well, of course, why not? Mm-hmm. Then, hey, how is your mother? Well, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Oh, we have 5 minutes left. Why don't we talk business? So, speed again. And process oriented. Those two big adjustments, mm-hmm. I think, I have to do.
Let's talk about building relationships in US. Talk about building connections. How do you gonna advise other international founders go about that?
Probably the same way I would advise someone that wants to increase their network, not for business purposes, but in general. Here it's plenty of opportunities. Every single week, you'll find at least one relevant event somewhere. Mm-hmm. A vertical to your industry mm-hmm. or to your special need. Recruiting needs, go for it. There is 10,000 of events nationwide. So it's not about just the opportunity. It's about how are you going to connect with that people. Mm-hmm. So my recipe is always leading with values.
Explain, yeah.
So it's not just what I can get from that person. It's if I'm actually going to get connected to that person. Why or how? Well, my core value is social justice and loyalty. So is this person going to be loyal and fair with me, with the relationship that I want to establish here? Yes or no? Because saying hello, passing business cards, or sharing a connection on LinkedIn is very easy. Everybody can do that. But if you are expecting to get like a long-lasting relationship where you can exchange value, then you need to be aware of what this person's values are. That's how I do it. That's how I met in my investors, for instance. I made sure that we were able to share a beer or a conversation. Like, what if we had to drive from Austin to El Paso? You know, it's like 9 hours, more or less.
Oh, wow.
Okay. So what if we have to drive, you and me, and I'm planning to have you as my investor. Mm. Can we spend the travel there, the trip there, without the radio on, just talking?
Make sure it's aligned the value.
That's an alignment that mm-hmm. is the way I try to build my connections. Mm-hmm. And then if people don't align, they clearly will mm-hmm. take a step away. And mm-hmm. they will leave you alone.
Focus on your people. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about investment. As an international founder, is it a myth that U.S. investors don't invest international founders or international business? Explain that to us.
It is a myth, partially.
Okay, so what is truth in your experience?
It's they are learning more and more about international companies, especially Latin America. I can talk about Latin America. They're learning. Before it was, big market, 500 million people, more or less. But we don't know how to do business there. We tried, we don't like corruption, it's so far away, blah, blah, blah. Now they know more, especially in my industry, in education. They know way more. They are more open. Are they ready to fully invest from the U.S. to Latin America? No, I don't think so.
But what about as an entrepreneur?
Coming
to Europe, but you also still international founders. Yeah.
So what they want to see from you is, oh, you have a business in Latin America. Very nice. How about the U.S.? Yeah, I have early adopters. I have a couple of paying customers, and I have this efficacy study that is showing that my product is going in the right direction. Good. Mm-hmm. Here's my money. That's what they want to see.
Love it. So basically, in US, we have customer, have traction, have future trend, and market sizing aligned with the growth we are talking about. But what more technically, does it matter your business is based in US or a foreign country like, you know, Latin, or how do you advise entrepreneurs' legal perspective?
Okay, so...
not advising, just general speaking.
Yeah, I'm not a lawyer. I don't want to give advice.
But your experience.
It could be expensive, you know.
Yeah.
No, you have to be at Delaware C Corp or whatever the vehicle is. So that's the parent company.
Based
in the U.S.
Parent
company in the U.S., for sure.
Got it.
And then you have subsidiaries in every mm-hmm. country. Revenue comes here. Most likely they want to see like a U.S. GAAP, the accounting system, if you are software or recurring revenue model, blah, blah, blah. They will want audited financial statements once a year. So like typical things. Then depending on the type of investor, they will like to see like a more thorough due diligence process where you explain in detail how you conduct business with public entities in Mexico, for instance, where we know, unfortunately, that corruption is heavy. Some things like that. Some things like that. But definitely a U.S. entity needs to be established before raising capital.
What is one biggest lesson you wish you know before you're raising that $9 million?
Legal fees.
Legal fees?
Legal fees.
Okay.
And it makes a world of difference who is your legal advisor. So, of course, at the beginning, no entrepreneur has a lot of money to spend on lawyers. We want to spend money on something like add true value to the business, right? But it doesn't mean you can have an amateur legal advisor. That it's not an option. That's not an option at all. So you need to be careful with that.
Definitely.
In that sense, accelerators can help, but make sure you are under a good umbrella in that sense. You're not being advised by people that don't know what they're doing. So that's one thing. Legal fees can go crazy if you don't pay attention to small things. Like, hey, my lawyer, my dear lawyer, why don't you explain to me this contract? Oh, okay, sure. And they will go for an hour over the phone. Every single minute will be billed. Latin America is not like that. Lawyers will not charge you for a conversation if there is not something material they have to do about it. In here, it's like, yeah, how are you? Good morning. Yeah, they are charging you immediately. Don't ask how they are. Just and ask upfront. Hey, how much is this going to cost me? Because I'm going to give you, you have 5 minutes to explain to me. So how much is this 5 minutes? Things like that. I'm just kidding. But
I love it.
It's be careful with legal fees.
Especially when they're not aware. They just like, oh, I'm just, you know, consulting, just asking questions. And boom, that fee potentially can make or break entrepreneur in early stage.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Exactly right.
Wow, Ruben, what a journey, what an impactful and fruitful journey. I cannot believe it's been 5 years and seeing you and leading a team, BeLeader, the impact you have grown. Wow, what an amazing process.
Thank you. Very excited to see where we're going now.
Tell us, what is next for you? What is exciting the most?
Yeah, it's all about so many things. But in terms of growth, we already have almost 10,000 kids in the U.S.
10,000, yes.
Using the product.
10,000 future leaders.
Hopefully.
They are.
So that's one big, big goal for us, making an impact here in the U.S. Footprint, it's something we are very obsessed with for the next 18, 24 months. Latin America is growing. We have Peru and Chile are our strongest markets, but we're growing nicely in Mexico, in Colombia. So the top economies in that part of the world that speak Spanish natively are where we are focused as well, and we're growing there. I'm very, very excited about this breakthrough we did using large language models. We're innovating in the way that we capture a student's fluency when they read aloud. And this is something we're announcing now in September. We have this product almost ready that will change the way kids learn to read and how teachers teach to read to Spanish-speaking students.
Amazing.
That's a game changer. It's something that doesn't exist. We're very, very excited about it. And hopefully we will help to close the gap, the learning gap that the pandemic dramatically increased. Those are my, I think, probably the top two exciting moments for the next 12 months.
I love it. What's American dream mean for you, Ruben?
probably means having like a platform where you can run a little bit and then jump higher and farther. Mm. It's a platform to me.
Are you jumping now?
I'm on my way to start.
Always humble, Ruben.
Trying. I told you. We try to do things in Latin America. We're trying.
You are trying. You're doing it every single day.
Sometimes we jump, sometimes we can't. But
that's life.
It's life.
Right? It's life. We run, we jump.
In that sense, we can be kangaroos. So we can jump whenever we want.
There you go. Anything else you want to share with the fellow entrepreneurs who may be also in the process of bringing their business, you know, to U.S. or the global market and maybe have a little bit of doubt in their heart, just like when I met you, you know, 5-6 years ago, that very second you're still excited, but there's so much unknown about U.S. market. What would you want to tell her or him?
Like something that I discovered?
Anything you want to share. Or from the manual book. You're right. Oh. 15 years ago.
Probably nothing about the U.S. But something I learned here is every state is like a different country. So if we are B2B. So if you are B2B, it could be probably wise to start just with one state and getting focused there. Mm-hmm. Once you harnessed the logistics and mm-hmm. small operational details, then you can move to the next state. So that's something unique about the U.S. It's one of the things probably that makes it more exciting mm-hmm. as a market. Mm. For us, for instance, we have customers a little bit everywhere. Mm-hmm. But Texas is our core market. Mm-hmm. We're heavily focused on this state. And that was something that wasn't on purpose. It wasn't by design. Oh. It was an accident.
Oh.
So that's why I think it's kind of a discovery. My vision was, yeah, for sure, like, of course. The U.S. is like 17 times larger than Chile only. That's the only difference. We are 20 million people. Here is like 350 million. Ah, yeah, it's like 17 million. But it's the same game. You can sell in this city or in this other city, and this is the same. Not true here. Mm. Not true. Mm-mm-mm. Every state has different regulations. Mm-hmm. In our industry, education, you need to be licensed and certified. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of procedures you have to do before you even start offering your product.
Mm-hmm. Is B2B sales difficult in the United States? What is the process for you?
It is difficult. In education, it's even tougher. It's slow. It's a slow burn game. So you have to be very patient. It's all about relationships, of course, at the highest level, but decision makers are everywhere in the process, along the process.
Top down, bottom up, everywhere.
Both. Sandwich. Mm-hmm. Sandwich. You have mm-hmm. to do both. Mm-hmm. So top down, we're very successful with teachers. They love us. They love what they see. They love how we do it. They perceive how different we are from the others. And they love that. They love the authenticity. Because we are Spanish speakers serving Spanish speaking students and teachers. We're not pretending to be something like most of the other companies are, unfortunately. Our content is authentic. We tell stories from that part of the world that relate much better with students' lives in here in the U.S. So that's something the market appreciate. Bottom up, perfect. Mm-hmm. Top down is a bit different. Top down, it's more high network individuals that require a lot of attention. You need to be all the time building the relationship. I have to learn golf, for instance.
You got a teacher.
Yeah, but we used to play tennis more than golf. So I don't know how that's working.
Just ask him.
I know. He's kind of reluctant. I'm gonna ask more frequently.
He's a great teacher.
I know he is.
I learned the first lesson and I dropped it.
I don't know if your audience know about it, but you may need to explain the joke. Okay.
It's all good. So he's playing tennis with Eric, now going to play golf. But okay, so you're going to learn a new hobby to really build up even better relationships.
That's something I need to invest time and a little money on.
Okay. Yeah. I hear you.
So it's in that sense, it's probably like every other B2B business. Mm-hmm. The only difference is here is way, way slower. I mean, slower. You have seasonalities. Oh, yeah, this is winter break. Oh, spring break. This is summer break.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, wait for me because I have this conference. So there's always something. Always something.
It's almost like contracting what you just said earlier. You speak about speed. You say everything here is so fast, 24/7, boom, boom, boom. And then in the meanwhile, on the sales front, things are slow because, again, in a different mindset. They are in a different priority.
But I love that decision makers are so well informed. They do their homework.
Mm-hmm.
They come to you with relevant questions. So every single customer so far has at least gave us one big lesson.
What do you think is your biggest secret for your success, Ruben? What is your superpower?
Persistence, I think.
Mm.
You have to keep going no matter what.
Going.
Yep. Embrace uncertainty.
I love it. My last question, what is your vision for BeReader?
Well, there are 100 million kids that speak this language natively.
Mm-hmm.
We see our company leading that transformation for these 100 million lives in a way that the Spanish speaking world becomes a way more developed and human centered part of the world to live in.
Beautiful.
And that's going to happen through education necessarily. And we want to lead that movement.
Wow. Ruben, wow. You never cease to amaze me. Thank you and thank you for being here and sharing such authentic and impactful stories. Your persistence, your authenticity, your devotion to a mission that you knew 15 years ago and still hold true to your heart. Mm-hmm. I believe that is your secret sauce to really bring that success to flown, you know, Chile, Austin, and global. So thank you so much for being here. What
thank
an
you.
Honor. Thank you for having us.
My pleasure. Thank you, Wen.
Amazing. And thank you, everybody, for tuning today. I hope you enjoyed it as much as we do. And we cannot wait to see you all next week. Bye, guys.